Good morning, and welcome to the SQM Fourth Quarter 2017 Earnings Conference Call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Please note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Gerardo Yenes. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to SQM's Fourth Quarter 2017 Earnings Conference Call. For your information, this conference call will be recorded and is being webcast live. You may access the webcast later on at our website, www.sqm.com. Joining me today as speaker is Patricio Solvignac, Chief Executive Officer. Before we begin, let me remind you that statements in this conference concerning the company's business outlook, future economic performance, anticipated profitability, revenue, expenses, or other financial items, anticipated cost synergies, and product or service line growth, together with other statements that are not historical facts, are forward-looking statements as that term is defined under federal securities law. Any forward-looking statements are estimates reflecting the best judgment of SQM based on currently available information and involve a number of risks, uncertainties, and other factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from those stated in such statements. Risks, uncertainties, and other factors that could affect the accuracy of such forward-looking statements are identified in the public filings made with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And forward-looking statements should be considered in light of those factors. I now leave you with our Chief Executive Officer, Patricio Solvignac, for brief comments before we move to Q&A.
Thank you very much, Gerardo. Good morning, and thank you for joining SQM 2017 Earnings Conference Call. Last night, we posted our results for the year. Our net income reached $428 million, an increase of over 50% when compared to the $278 million seen the year before. For the fourth quarter of 2017, we reported earnings of over $110 million. Our strong results were based on several factors seen during the year: record sales volumes in potassium nitrate and iodine, higher solar salt sales volumes, and most importantly, higher lithium prices. Excellence and flexibility of our operations combined with the responsiveness of our sales and marketing teams supported the positive dynamics seen in the market, allow us to capture the incremental growth. We started 2018 with very positive news for the company and the broader lithium market. When we announced the termination of the arbitration process with Corfo and reaching an agreement allowing us to produce and sell up to 2.2 million tons of lithium carbonate equivalent through 2030. This new production allowance comes at a higher lease payment and other costs, which will be applied from the moment the agreement becomes effective. That could be as early as in March 2018. This agreement has opened up new growth opportunities for the company and Chile as a global lithium arena. We believe that lithium demand will remain strong. We foresee an average annual growth of approximately 18% in the next 5 years, 18% per year. We estimate that the market will need at least 50,000 tons per year of additional supply to maintain its equilibrium. Based on that, we will be increasing our current carbonate production capacity in the Salar del Carmen to reach 100,000 metric tons per year in 2019. This expansion of 52,000 metric tons will require a total investment of $170 million. Potential future expansion will depend on market conditions, and our goal is to maintain around 25% market share over the next few years. In short term, having already closed price negotiation contracts for the first half of 2018, we see that the price for this period are more than 20% higher than the price seen in the fourth quarter of 2017. That confirms that the market remains tight and the demand strong. We estimate that the total lithium chemical demand could grow over 20%, reaching almost 260,000 metric tons in 2018. The development of the electrical vehicles is driving this growth, and we expect EV demand to grow around 35% per annum in the next 5 years, and the total demand for lithium chemicals to more than double in the same period. Despite the potential new capacity coming online at the second half of 2018, we expect average price for that period to be higher than the price seen in the second half of 2017. Because of our continued commitment to the lithium market, we will progress with our development of our lithium projects in Argentina and Australia, with the objective to start production in 2020 and 2021. Respectively. In 2018, we'll continue to focus on growth opportunities in all of our five core business lines and the completion of the expansion of our announced production capacities. Our capital expenditure in 2018 is expected to be around $517 million and will include approximately $157 million investment in projects outside Chile. Along with our strong earnings, we are also proud of the strong balance sheet which we finished the year. During 2017, we paid approximately $370 million in dividends. At the same time, we were able to reduce the net financial debt to EBITDA ratio to 0.3 from 0.6. and reported almost $1 billion in cash. I look forward to another year of challenges and business opportunities, to working along with my team on continuing the growth of the company and maximizing its value for all of our stakeholders. I thank you for joining the call today and will now open the line for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touchtone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. The first question comes from Ben Isaacson with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
It's Oliver on for Ben. Thanks for taking my question. So how much lead time would you need to be able to go beyond the announced 100,000 tons in Chile? If you see demand shaping up better than expected, are you still able to process more at the existing facility, or would you need to build a new facility, and how long would that take?
Thank you, Ben. As we indicated, we increased the announced expanded capacity for this year to 70,000 tons, so we will end 2018 with 70,000, and then in 2019 we expect to have an additional 30,000 to end up with 100,000. To move to the next stage, we could need less than 2 years in order to increase an additional 20 or 30,000 tons.
Okay. The next question comes from Joel Jackson with BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Okay. I have three questions. Good morning, Patricio. Patricio, you're seeing a lot of your competitors now put out very large expansions in the last few weeks, and they now have, your competitors, very large demand assumptions for lithium for 2025, 800,000 tons, a million tons. You've commented that lithium demand is growing at about 30,000 to 35,000 tons a year. Your competitors are now saying it's at 70,000 tons a year. Do you think the 70,000 tons a year is reasonable, or do you believe it's 30 to 35,000 a ton and a year, and can you please elaborate?
Okay, morning, Joe, and thank you very much for the questions. What we are indicated is that we believe that the demand will increase in the next 5 years by an average of 50,000 tons per year. In the past, when we have projected some of the demand, we have been short. So we'll have to see how the electrical vehicles really develop. We have seen news very often from the car manufacturer as well as from the countries in regulation point of view. So we'll have to continue monitoring. With the information that we have right now, our best estimate is that the new demand means an average for the next 5 years of 50,000 tons additional per year.
Okay, that's helpful. Let me elaborate on Oliver's question that he just asked. So to get above 100,000 tons, do you need how much brine do you have? So to get above 100,000 tons, do you need to pump more brine? Do you have enough brine to get you to 150? I mean, if you want to get the 216,000 tons that Corfo suggests you may be able to get to, how much more brine do you need to pump? How many more ponds you need to dig? I mean, can you give us an idea of the work that needs to be done to get to 150 or even 200 in Atacama? Thank you.
Basically, given that we were injecting a lot of brine because of our production of potash, our plan is that we will not need to pump any additional brine. What we will do is to optimize, increase the yield. We have new ways of doing it that will allow us to produce all the additional lithium that we want to produce without pumping more brine. So in that respect, most of the investment to do the additional lithium that we will be producing will be at the chemical plant site.
But Patricia, I'm asking above. Let's say you get 100,000 tons, and now you need to go above 100. You want to go to 130 or 150 or 200. To go beyond 100, how much brine do you need to pump more? How many ponds do you need to dig? What do you need to do to get to an extra 50 or 100 beyond 100?
Yeah, my answer, Joe, was exactly that. Beyond 100, we will not need to pump more.
So you can get to 200 without pumping more brine?
Yes.
Okay, that's helpful. And one more question. Your capital intensity is extremely low versus competitors. You can bring on 50,000 tons for just under $4,000 a ton. Your competitors are planning large expansions, are 10,000 a ton, 15,000 a ton. Does it not make sense for you to just go to 200,000 tons in Atacama, not do Australia, not let competitors take the share from you? You have the best capital intensity. So what stops you from going bigger?
When we have defined our strategy and given the size that we have, given the importance that we have for most of our customers, we decided to have jurisdiction diversification. We think that it's a wise move from our side to have this kind of diversification from technology and from jurisdiction in order to be able to, of course, average the risk. And that's why we will continue with the development of the projects in Australia, in Argentina, which in our opinion, they are also in the lower part of the cost curve compared with what are the other supplies in the supply line. On the other hand, one thing is the investment, and another thing is the OPEX and also the rent that we need to pay. In the case of Atacama, of course, we have a very good CAPEX position, we have a very good OPEX position, but we will need to pay much more rent.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question comes from Andrew McCarthy with Citi. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much for the call, Patricio and Gerardo. My first question, just following up on that point on the geographical diversification, could you elaborate a little more on why that's so important to you and to your customers, and whether there's any relationship there with the types of lithium chemicals that you're seeing in particular demand from your clients? Maybe, for example, seeing more demand in hydroxide or battery grade lithium carbonate. Just to get your thoughts on that point, please.
I'm sorry, Andrew. I cannot listen to you very well. Can you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, sure. So I was just wondering if you could provide some more color, elaborate a little further on why geographical diversification is important to you and to your clients, and related to that, if it's to do with perhaps the type of products where you're seeing the higher growth rates in the future, maybe hydroxide. I don't know whether, given the new, as you're referring to, the new royalties that you'd be paying to Corfo, whether that makes producing hydroxide maybe not as competitive anymore in Chile versus other territories. Just to get your sort of thoughts and thinking there on that point, please.
Okay, thank you. Basically, more than geographically, it's also jurisdictionally. For some of our customers, we represent more than 50%, in some cases even 70% of their needs. And they, of course, rely on us not only on the growing of their needs, but also they do a lot of investments in order to produce their final product with our lithium chemicals. So they want to make sure that the risk or of not being able to supply for some time or whatever in the future is well balanced. When you are in one only geographic location, you have risk of earthquake, risk of port, risk of strike, risk of regulations, and so forth and so on. So when you supply to those customers and you are able to bring products from different jurisdictions and different geographies, you are well balanced in order to be able to assure with less risk the future demand. Of course, that is balanced together with the total cost, which includes the capex, includes the OPEX, and includes the rent. And that is what we are doing. We want to be flexible. We want to give this, and this is very welcome by our customers. But also it's important that we see that the lithium market will continue to grow. There is a lot of discussion today how much the supply will be. The track record of the industry in the past has not been good from that respect. But we have more than 20 year experience. We think that we are an important player and the industry is believing us and the industry also want us to continue growth. So that's why we will continue to look at the growth and also at this diversification. Regarding the relation or what we see on lithium hydroxide compared with lithium carbonate, yes, there is more demand on lithium hydroxide because of the new cathode, especially in some EVs that prefer to start their production with lithium hydroxide at battery grade. So we are increasing our capacity here in Chile immediately. We expect to end this year with a capacity of 13,500 tons from the 6,000 tons that we used to have last year. And we are also analyzing what is best to produce in Australia.
And of the 52,000 that you're adding now following the announcement in the press release, or to put it another way, are you planning to increase your hydroxide capacity in Chile above the 13,500 along the lines of the current plans you have?
We do have the environmental permits to do that, but we have not decided yet. We want to see how the markets evolve. They're growing from 6,000 to 13,500 is a big thing, and we expect to be running at that hopefully next year, but having the capacity by the end of this year.
Okay, very clear. And just my final question is on the guidance you gave on the prices. You referred in the press release to the market price being still strong in the first half of this year and then maybe stabilizing or falling slightly in the second half. I'm just trying to understand, when you talk about market price, what specifically are you referring to? Is that the price realizations you're expecting, or is that current contract negotiations, or is that sort of spot prices in China? Maybe if you could elaborate a little bit on what that refers to, please.
When we refer to prices and given our size, we refer always to the price that we realize on average. And we think that is a good representation of what the market price is. As you were referring, of course, there are some differences between some very big consumers with small spot consumers, but this is the average price that we realize in our sales price. And again, given our size, given our diversification of our sales geographically and also for industries, we think that it will represent the market price.
Very clear. Thanks very much.
The next question comes from Chris Terry with Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. The first one is just on the production profile that you've outlined. So for this year, you said that you'll get to 70,000 tons by the end of the year, and that you'll produce around 5,000 tons more than last year, so implying 55 for this year. For 2019, given that you're expanding by an additional 30,000 tons to go to 100 total, what sort of production would you expect in 2019? And then what's the ramp-up time to get to the actual 100,000 tons? Does that come through in 2020, or is that longer than that before it actually flows through? That's my first question. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Basically, what we are accustomed in the last years of this market in lithium is that we are operating at full capacity and even in some cases over nameplate because of the market situation. But in the future, that could not be the case, as we have seen in many other of our business line and in general terms in the market. So one thing always is important, what is your capacity, and another thing is your decision on how much you want to produce and sell. Right now, what we're seeing this year is that we will continue to produce as much as we can and trying to move as fast as we can and sell to the market. And that is in 2018, where our total capacity at the end of the year, as you say, we expect it to be 70,000, and probably we will be producing some more than 55, but regarding the inventory that we need to keep and also the ramp-up, we are expecting to sell 55. Regarding next year, we'll end up in 2019 with 100,000, and that will not be ready from the first of the year, so probably we could be able to sell, let's say, 80,000 if we want, but that will be a decision that we will be taking when the time comes.
Okay, that's helpful. And then you answered this, I think, partly before, but you're saying for the hydroxide mix for this year that the additional 6,500 tons to take you to 13,000, you don't complete that until later in the year. Will you get any benefit from a mix effect on the hydroxide side in the second half of this year at all?
Yeah, we expect to sell some more than the previous year, not that much, and then we'll have to decide the next year how the mix will be depending on how the market evolves.
Okay. So we should just assume from a mixed perspective you get 13,000 of hydroxide from next year onwards and minimal included in 2018.
Yeah, we expect to sell more, of course. That's why we're doing the expansion to 13.5. So in 2019, we expect to sell much more than we sold this year.
Okay. And just a high-level question on the production profile and the way that you're thinking about the business. So you obviously have the capacity now to go, the option to go above 200,000 tons, and you're saying that you'll expand at a rate that matches with what customers want. If you were to see some of your competitors announce more supply expansions going forward, would you react to those expansions by doing more yourself to keep the market share? Or how would you think about that interaction as opposed to what the actual customers want?
Well, I first think that the companies that will have the real possibility of increasing the capacity are the ones at the lowest cost. And we understand and we believe that we are one of the lowest cost producers. So our initial thinking, as we indicated, is that we will keep our market share. The market is growing a lot. And in order to keep the market share, we will need to grow a lot. And that is exactly what we're doing. Now there are many dynamics that we will have to see in the market. If you remember, at the beginning of last year, we indicated that we thought that a lot of new capacity was announced and a capacity could be in the second half of the year, and that really didn't happen. The market continued to be very strong first because the growth of the market was higher than everybody expected, and second, because the supply was not as fast as some people promised. So that is the thing that we will have to continue monitoring. We want to be prepared. We want to have the installed capacity to respond to our customers on time and also to continue to increase if the market needs more products.
Okay, thanks Patricia. The last one for me, just in terms of balancing the growth and the capex you've got coming up with dividend potential, can you just restate the goals on the dividend side and how you plan to get that balance?
Well, the shareholders approved in the last shareholder meeting a dividend policy that basically stated that we will distribute 100% of our profit if we maintain some financial ratios that are specified in that policy. So right now, that is an indication that we have from our shareholders. Right now, of course, we are increasing our investment plan. This year will be $517 million approximately. But at the same time, we have been generating strong cash. We do have today $1 billion in cash. We do have a very low net financial debt to be done, but we are increasing our investment plan.
Okay. Is there a set policy there, though?
I'm sorry, regarding the dividend policy, that was the one that the shareholders approved last April in 2017. And according to the Chilean regulation, the shareholder meeting this April will have to, again, establish what will be the policy.
Okay. Thanks, Patricia.
The next question comes from Daniela Iger with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. I have actually two questions. The first one is on potash. What is your expectation of your long-term production of potash, assuming that this focus on lithium production continues? And also, moving towards lithium, could you provide more details on the additional lithium volumes expected for the second semester from competition other than your own? How are you seeing that impacting the market? Thank you.
Thank you, Daniela. Regarding potash, as we have indicated, we are right now operating in a way to optimize our lithium production without pumping more brine. So, of course, that is affecting our production of potash. And, of course, economically, it makes a lot of sense. Last year, we sold in total potassium chloride and potassium sulfate close to 1.35 million tons, and this year we expect to sell less than 1 million. At the same time, we are using more potash in our own production of potassium nitrate, which means that we have less potassium chloride to sell to the market. But in general terms, I think that that will continue to diminish a little bit, but not that much. We will be able to sell in the range of 900,000 tons, more or less, of potassium chloride. Regarding the production from competitors, as I indicated, we have been 20 years in this market. We have went through from many different stages, and there have been always a lot of promising of new production in China or in Canada or even in the U.S. and other places. And always the track record has not been that good. So right now, of course, there is a much stronger demand, the price is much higher, there is a lot of incentive for other people to look at projects. There are many projects in the market now, but we'll have to see it. We follow them, of course, and try to understand how competitive they are, but we don't want to make the mistake that maybe we did in the past, that we did not have the new capacity in place to respond to the market.
Perfect. Thank you.
The next question comes from Lucas Ferreira with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, Patricio. My first question is regarding your views for long-term prices. I if you see that since your agreement with Corfo, your stock is down like 25%, as investors becoming more bearish on the long-term price view and this fast expansion in potential expansion in the brines. So I guess my question is, where do you see your let's say incentive price for a deep expansion in the brines, and the same price incentive price for expansion in spodumene and different regions of the world, and how fast you think this, let's say, industry cost curve could be flattening out, or how fast the brines could be displacing the spodumene? And in other words, do you still think the spodumene could be seen as, let's say, long-term support to the cost curve? So that's my first question. And the second question is regarding your price outlook for the year. You said you're optimistic. Just to make sure I understand, you said in the beginning that you're seeing like contracts being set 30% higher than fourth quarter numbers. Is that like up to 30% or on average 30% higher? Can you give me a bit more color on that, and also elaborate a little bit on the inventories and across the value chain, how they look like and how tight the market is? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Luca. Regarding the long-term price, this is the $1 million question, of course, and that depends finally on the, as always, on the supply and demand balance. In the past, we have been short on what the demand has grown. Demand is growing much more than everybody expected, and I personally have the view that probably the demand will continue to grow even more of our base case scenario. Regarding the supply, as I always indicated, the industry has not been with a good track record. Projects tend to be more complicated, tend to be take more time, and some of them tend to not work, basically. In my opinion, when you compare a brine-based project and a spodumene-based project or hard rock-based project, I do not like the picture of saying that one is worse than another one. And I think that, like in any case, there are very good hard rock projects, like Mount Holland, for instance, and there are very bad hard rock project. At the same time, in brine, there are very good brine projects like the Salar de Tacama, and there are very bad brine projects because of the chemistry, because of the hydrology, because of the way you get the brine out, because the technology that you use. So I think you have to look each project in its own merit. So having said that, my view for the long-term price is that, and we have been saying that from the very beginning, that the actual situation is a very, very tight market, and that will not continue. If this will be at the end of this year or 2019, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, if we don't have really precise information to be able to guess on that. But of course, in the long term, we also have been very clear about that. The prices will not stay in the level that are today of $16,000 per ton, but that will, of course, relax with the new supply. Regarding the price outlook for 2018, what we indicated is that we already have closed most of our sales for the first semester, and the average price that we are getting in the first semester of 2018 is 20% higher than what we got in the second semester of last year. That's in the first place. That is the average price that we will be getting. And regarding the second semester, even though there are possibilities of a new supply, our estimate today is that the average price, which probably will be lower on the first semester, we estimated that anyway will be higher than what it was in 2017.
Thanks. And Patricia, another question, a very simple one. That $20 million charge, one-off charge related to the Corfu deal you guys announced, I just wanted to make sure where that was allocated, if this was below the EBITDA line or above the EBITDA line. And when we look at the breakdown of the cost of each operation that you published on the FECU, if there was allocated in the lithium business or in others, just to make sure how that impacted your results in the fourth quarter.
The payment that we did to Corfu of $20 million, more or less, that was reflected as indicated in 2017 and was below the margins.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Alexander Falco with HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I have a question on the rationale on, you know, the I think that the first phase of expansion, the first 50,000 is in contract, is there. I just want to know if you could walk us through after that, what is the, you know, what is going to be the decision-making process in order to go full on and just, you know, deal with that? Or is there something contingent to where the market's going to be, where the price is going to be? Or, you know, given that you guys are, you know, allegedly the lowest cost producer in the world, you know, it really doesn't matter where the price is. The rationale makes sense for you just to go ahead and do that. So what, is there any IRR threshold, any decision-making process that we could walk us through? That would be awesome. Thank you.
Basically, our decision is a technical decision. We are increasing the capacity of our actual plant, and that's the way that we optimize from an engineering point of view to have a very low capex, as you view. So that's why we are going. We can go, as I indicated also, with an additional project overhanded, and we will decide that on time. We have time to do that. We need first to run our plant at 70, and then the next year at 100. And then, of course, we will have time before that, and we are preparing all the corresponding engineering to go further if that makes sense. And the decision process basically is optimizing the value of the company in the long term. We do have experience with our other business lines. We have experience in the past with lithium, and we learned from that, and we will try to apply all of that wisdom in order to make the best decision to optimize the value.
Okay, understood. Just on the next year's expansion, how's going to be the ramp up? Can you tell us? Can you expect, everything going full throttle? You know, it's going to be a gradual. What's the best way to model that expansion?
We expect to have the 70,000 ton capacity ready by the end of this year, so we can have full operate that the next year, and then we will be building the capacity of the 30,000 additional to get to 100,000, and that will be ready in the second half of the year. Probably we'll be able to produce some of those during next year.
Perfect. Thank you.
This concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Gerardo Yanez for any closing remarks.
Thank you all very much for joining us today, and we hope to have you with us in the next conference call. Bye, everyone.
The conference has now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.